Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket, Chad Daybell has an arraignment. Lori Vallow goes to the state hospital. Second, the threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. A case study, that's right, El Chapo's wife to plead guilty. Third, charges for the death of a six-year-old boy on a California highway. Fourth, a prosecutor charged in Kentucky. Fifth, more stories of those in positions of trust gone wild. Death by eye drops. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, YOLO. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new content or go live. Now, we went live today. So if you haven't seen the Chad Daybell arraignment, you can watch the entire thing along with my analysis of what took place. So let's talk about Chad Daybell. He had an arraignment, and Lori Vallow goes to the state hospital. Well, Chad Daybell entered pleas of not guilty after being formally advised by Judge Boyce in an Idaho courtroom today. He entered pleas of not guilty as the judge asked him how he pled in regards to the counts of conspiracy and murder as to JJ, Ty Lee, as well as his former wife, Tammy Daybell. There were two counts of insurance fraud, not guilty on all counts. The court set June 23rd for a scheduling conference to schedule a trial date. Under the six-month speedy trial act there in the state of Idaho, they have until December 9th to get Chad Daybell to trial. Now, we're not sure exactly if his now wife, Lori Vallow, would have rather been by his side for an arraignment today, but she is on her way to the state hospital. The court issued an order of commitment. As you may recall, on March 8th of 2021, the court ordered an evaluation for competency as it related to Lori Vallow. Thereafter, the court and the parties received the completed psychological assessment and determined that the defendant was not competent to proceed. The state advised the court that it may contest the findings. And then on June 4th, the state filed its withdrawal of the contest. And therefore, the court said, let's send her off to the state hospital to be restored. And the court did make specific findings. Basically, that the court finds that the defendant lacks fitness to proceed in that the defendant is incapable of assisting the defense in this case. That makes me believe is that Mark Means was trying to talk about the case, have facts about the case, and she basically, and I've had this kind of situation where a defendant is completely delusional and wants to talk about everything except the case, all right? They want to talk about whatever, but it doesn't get to actually being able to assist in the defense whatsoever. So we'll see if the state hospital can ultimately restore Lori Vallow to competency so that she can then face the charges where she's never actually been advised because she was found not to be competent when they got to the advisement on the indictment alleging her involvement in the death of her two children, Ty Lee and JJ, as well as being responsible allegedly for the death of Tamara Daybell, Chad Daybell's former wife. The court made further findings in his order regarding Lori Vallow and basically said that she is not dangerously mentally ill as defined in the statute, and that basically the Department of Health and Welfare is basically now the provider for the care and treatment at the appropriate facility, and that hopefully that this will take no longer than 90 days. The sheriff was ordered to transport Lori Vallow to the facility, and an evaluation of Lori Vallow's mental condition shall be performed at the time of the defendant's admission to the facility, and that a progress report shall be prepared of the defendant's mental condition. This report shall include any opinion as to whether the defendant is fit to proceed, or if not, whether there is a substantial probability the defendant, Lori Vallow, will be fit to proceed within the foreseeable future. That is huge. That's what we should know within 90 days. And assuming everything goes well in the Chad Daybell case, we'll be rolling right along in the case. So we'll see how this may affect anything in this matter. One final note in the order. If the defendant escapes from the custody during her confinement, the director shall immediately notify this court and the prosecuting attorney and the sheriff immediately. I know that's always a little caveat that they put in those types of orders, but wouldn't that be funny? All right. Next on the docket, I have said this before and I will say it again because it's absolutely true and it is a Reichism, okay? The threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. I have seen it happen, whether it be a drug conspiracy or a family, people are thinking, I'm not going to prison for the rest of my life for that guy. I'll plead guilty to what I did, but I'm not gonna plead guilty to what that person did. Let me tell you how things went down. You would think the wife of El Chapo, you heard that guy, right? Serving life sentence down at the ADX here in Florence, Colorado, because he's considered kind of a dangerous guy, a slippery guy, because he also escaped while he was in custody in Mexico, not once, but twice. And then on top of that, oh, that's right, he may have billions of dollars and resources where he could basically whack somebody if he wanted to. It is reported that El Chapo's wife, the former beauty queen, the 31-year-old Emma Coronel Aspero, is expected to enter a plea of guilty on Thursday in federal district court. Aspero was arrested at Dulles International Airport just outside of Washington, D.C. in February on suspicion of aiding her husband's drug trafficking business. She was slapped with the charge of conspiracy to traffic cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, and marijuana for importation into the United States. That's a crime. That's right. It is, even in today's world, still a crime. Well, she's expected to enter a plea of guilty. It's uncertain whether she is cooperating or whether she's just going to plead straight up. But needless to say, I don't think that's what either she was expecting when she landed at Dulles International Airport, and I'm really not sure El Chapo expected his wife to plead guilty. The question is what kind of cooperation, if any, she's given to the federal government? Could she take down the cartel? Ooh, you gotta wonder. That's worth something to the United States attorney somewhere. Next on the docket, charges have been filed against two people that the prosecutors believe responsible for the killing of a six-year-old boy on a California freeway. The couple was charged in connection with the road rage death of six-year-old Aiden Leos last month. And the man of this couple is being accused of murder. Marcus Anthony Erez, 24, has been charged with murder and shooting in an occupied vehicle. He faces sentencing enhancements because of those particular charges. And Erez's girlfriend, Wynn Lee, 23, was charged with being an accessory after the fact and illegally carrying a concealed firearm. Now, the couple's arraignment was postponed to June 18th, but the judge set bail at $2 million for Erez and $500,000 for Lee. Erez is facing 40 years to life in prison if convicted, and Lee faces up to 3 years in prison and 1 year in jail as well. Now, the young boy, Aiden, was fatally shot on May 21st on State Route 55 in Orange County. His mother was driving him to kindergarten. Authorities believe that Lee was driving and Erez fired the shot that killed the boy. According to the boy's mother, Joanna Clunan, and those who stopped to help her, Clunan had made a gesture to a vehicle that cut her off, which then drove behind her and someone fired into Clunan's vehicle. Aiden, who was sitting in the back seat, was shot in the abdomen and pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Ladies and gentlemen, let it go, okay? There are crummy drivers out there. There are completely rude, inconsiderate, and probably shouldn't deserve a license. We've all been frustrated by it. But I'm telling you, let it go. I've seen cases. Somebody has a firearm in the car, and I've told this before. I love firearms. I have an arsenal, but they complicate everything. I've had clients that have literally shot at other cars. I've had clients that have simply waved it around. Still can be a crime. Don't do it. Keep your gun out of the whole picture. Not necessary. Don't go up to another car, because I've seen situations where somebody pulls up after a road rage, tells the other person off, and then the other person does something with a firearm as well. It's just a dangerous situation. Let it go. Is it really worth going to prison for the rest of your life? Don't think so. This is a tragedy. Obviously, we'll give these two the presumption of innocence, but doesn't look good. All right, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a prosecutor charged. Okay, listen to this. A Kentucky prosecutor who has twice run for statewide office was indicted on wire fraud charges stemming from an alleged scheme that funneled more than $365,000 from a delinquent tax fund into, that's right, personal accounts. Now, that's all according to federal prosecutors. And we will give Lawrence County Attorney Michael Hogan and his wife, Joy Hogan, the presumption of innocence, but it is alleged that they used the money to make home mortgage, credit card, and auto loan payments, as well as other household expenses, including utilities. It is also alleged in the indictment that they made cash withdrawals. Now, Michael Hogan is accused of defrauding the Appalachian County's Child Support Enforcement Office by allegedly billing the program for far more hours than he worked. The indictment charged that Michael Hogan and Joy Hogan with one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud. Michael Hogan also faces 9 counts of wire fraud and 5 counts of federal program theft. His wife worked as a legal secretary in the county attorney's office. As the county attorney, Hogan was responsible for collecting delinquent taxes in Lawrence County. Apparently, this borders the West Virginia border. The delinquent tax fund should have been used on operating expenses in the county attorney's office. But instead, it's alleged that over a 3-year period, some $365,000 from that delinquent account made its way into the Hogan's personal account and the couple's joint account, and they spent that on their personal expenses. The alleged scheme was discovered during a review by the county attorney's office once an audit was done by the state's auditor. When confronted about the slight overpayment of some $360,000, Hogan said his wife's compensation from the delinquent tax fund was a salary supplement that amounted to honest pay for honest work, and it benefited the public. Well, the grand jury didn't believe so. Neither did the United States attorney. Mr. Hogan faces up to 20 years in prison on the wire fraud charges and another 10 years in federal prison for the theft of the federal money. Now, in the grand scheme of things, certainly this attorney is going to have some licensing issues. $365,000 to the United States government is a drop in the bucket in light of the money that they've spent over the last year or so. But you still cannot take things that are not yours. Simple rule. Everybody knows it. Everyone's parents taught you that at a young age. Doesn't change when you become an adult. And in some developing news, Mark Means filed a motion for contempt for failure to comply with a lawfully served subpoena. As you may recall, several weeks ago, we talked about Mr. Means serving a subpoena on Ms. Gibb, Melanie Gibb, who refused service. Apparently, it was dropped at her feet and she walked away. And it was basically to produce all communications related between Melanie Gibb and any prosecutors in this particular case. Now, Ms. Gibb apparently didn't respond to the subpoena. Nobody filed a motion to quash. And so Mark Means is asking for a contempt order for failing to comply, which would basically means asking for Ms. Gibb to produce these particular documents. Going to be interesting to see how that works out for Mr. Means. Certainly, Ms. Gibb, if she was properly served, should have gone about the appropriate legal process and have an attorney file a motion to quash or show up on her own asking that the subpoena be quashed. However, I'm not sure the court's going to take any action on this particular matter anytime soon because, as you may recall, Lori Vallow is not competent to proceed and it puts a stay on the case. We'll see what the judge will decide, whether he'll wait until Lori Vallow is deemed competent or whether he'll take action on it anytime soon. We'll let you know. More stories of those in position of trust gone wild. A federal lawsuit filed in Michigan on Monday alleged that an elementary school teacher and a specialist sexually assaulted two legally blind 8-year-old students back in 2008 and 2019. The lawsuit alleges that back in October of 2018, a teacher groped the young girl's breasts while they were alone together in a room. During another session, it's alleged that a teacher put some sort of a blindfold on the girl's eyes before placing his genitals in her hand. The girl allegedly stated that she pulled off the blindfold because she became uncomfortable and discovered the educator zipping up his pants. To make things more difficult, the alleged unidentified teacher has not been criminally charged. The police investigated the accusations, but the prosecutor declined to try the case. The teacher apparently also continued to work for the school district until his contract ended. And in a surprising turn of events in that particular complaint, they're only alleging damages of $75,000. I figured they'd be asking for more. Now, one more story of those in position of trust. A youth pastor has been arrested in Florida after a teenage boy found a surveillance camera in the bathroom of his church. David Patrick Nims, 37, was charged with one count of video voyeurism by a person 18 or older who is responsible for the welfare of a child younger than 16. The charge is a felony, and the charge can carry up to 15 years in prison. The police reports state that the 14-year-old boy entered the bathroom of the Calvary Baptist Church where Nims works in Pensacola, Florida. The 14-year-old boy noticed the camera was pointed at him while using the restroom, and he immediately threw it away. The 14-year-old then went to the pastor and told him what he had in fact found. Once the investigation began, Nims was identified as a suspect. The surveillance footage taken by the camera was investigated and confirmed that the boy had been recorded using the restroom. The video showed a face and clothing thought to be those of Nims. Witnesses were unable to identify a bathroom in the footage that they were also able to recover, leading investigators to believe that another bathroom was also being recorded. If you can't trust your teachers and you can't trust the pastor, who can you trust, I guess, ladies and gentlemen? I don't know. But I certainly know I would be getting crimetalksearch.com and searching everybody that my children were coming in contact with. Next on the docket, a very unusual case, death by eye drops? Yeah, I've never heard of this. But a Milwaukee woman has been charged with first-degree murder after being accused of fatally poisoning a friend with eye drops and then allegedly staging her death as an overdose. But wait, there's more. It's then alleged that the woman defrauded the deceased woman of nearly $300,000. It is alleged that Jesse Kurzeski, and if I'm pronouncing that improperly, I'm sure somebody will let me know, was booked into jail this past week. Officials allege that Kurzeski murdered the woman, who hasn't been identified, with tetrahydrozoline, which is the main ingredient in eye drops. It's unclear how the woman ingested the solution. The prosecutors believe that the defendant took advantage of an at-risk individual and posed a risk to the public, which is why they also were asking for her not to be released in any way whatsoever. The woman's death was initially suspected to be a drug overdose. However, authorities now believe that Kurzeski staged the death to appear that way. Crushed pills were later found on the woman's chest, according to police reports. Kurzeski also made some incriminating statements where she stated that she watched the victim imbibe Visine with vodka shortly before she died. She also allegedly told a cellmate where she's being held that she slipped the victim several bottles of Visine to kill her. According to the criminal complaint, Kurzeski didn't think the eye drops would kill her because she had been drinking vodka so much on a regular basis. Following the death of the woman, Kurzeski then assumed control of her financial holdings, and according to investigators, they believe that Kurzeski fleeced the woman of some $290,000. Lots of theft going on these days. Now, the family of the deceased woman said that they originally thought that the death seemed rather suspicious, and when it was ultimately ruled a homicide, when the autopsy revealed toxic levels of the tetrahydrozoline were found in the woman's system. The medical examiner stated that it was impossible for such high levels of the toxin to have entered her system through her eyes alone. So apparently they were drinking the tetrahydrozoline. Kurzeski's denied staging the victim's body, and she is being held on a $1 million bond. According to doctors, as little as 1 to 2 milliliters can be dangerous or fatal for children. As for adults, it varies, where it depends on the body size and mass of the adult individual. And if you look at other cases where people have been poisoned by the eye drops, there are situations where a bottle, or even sometimes less than half a bottle, can cause a lot of problems. Apparently, tetrahydrozoline can restrict blood vessels that are supplying the blood to the heart and basically put the heart in danger, according to doctors. Interesting case. People will always seem to come up with new and interesting ways to take advantage of individuals. All right, next on the docket, and the word of the day for our dumb criminal contestants, YOLO. All right, please meet our dumb criminal contestants of the day. It's a duo. Shannon Finley, 52, and Jermaine Jackson, 44. Well, they were stopped at a park, and a patrolman noticed a man engaging in pleasuring a woman in a crawling tunnel at the Pocahontas Park in Vero Beach, Florida. It's alleged that when the cop arrived at the park, he reported observing Sharon Finley laying on her back, face up, with her jean shorts pulled around her ankles. Part of her private parts were exposed. Finley's companion, Jermaine Jackson, was apparently atop of her with his face allegedly placed in her crotch area. When they were asking what they were doing, Finley told the couple that they were simply making out. Mr. Jackson was a little more direct and said, quote, "I was eating some blank," end quote. Conducting a thorough investigation, police found a bottle of Gulf Crest vodka and two cans of Four Loko. Finley reportedly explained that we were both drinking the Four Loko and the vodka, but you only live once. That's right. YOLO, you only live once. Finley and Jackson were arrested for the heinous crime of possession of an open container and booked into the Indian River County Jail. The couple escaped additional charges related to their alleged sexual conduct in the crawling tunnel because nobody else was there to see their antics. Kind of goes to the, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to see it, did it really make any noise, I guess? Interesting. Anyway, these two are dumb criminal contestants of the day. I think they may be in the running for the lead, but hey, you only live once. And if they're crowned the winners and they get some Crime Talk gear, I think we should take a snapshot that you send it back with YOLO written underneath. All right, busy day. Check out our video that we did earlier this morning regarding the arraignment for Chad Daybell, as well as our live that we did last night discussing the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matters. I think that you will enjoy them. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.